beat.
Stop. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Earl. How are you?
Even with the weather being what it is?
Well, at least the sun's out.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about, man. You're looking at life through the right lands, man. The sun is shining. All is right in the world, and especially all right in the studio, because I am joined once again by Sarah Geenan.
You did it. You did it.
Did I get it right?
You got it perfect.
All right. I mean, if people really knew how long I've been going through this, and I'm going to butcher your name again because...
I told you, you're overthinking it.
Yeah. Because, last time I got it wrong, and I thought I had it right, the pronunciation of it and all those, but I'm not alone.
You're not alone. You're not alone. I respond to a variety of things. Sometimes, okay. Way worse than Janine, so.
Let me ask you, so you've been married a while. When you first met your prospective husband, did you have trouble pronouncing his last name?
His
which
no.
Which is now your last name?
No, that's my name. I didn't
that's your name.
I didn't change it. I didn't change
okay.
it.
Well, so, if I would have been your husband, I would have demanded that you change that. I'm only joking.
My entire family is used to it. So it's anything from Green, Janine, there's a variety. So
welcome back to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are a candidate for District 1. Milwaukee County?
Yep, the Court of Appeals, District 1, and that district is all of Milwaukee County.
Yeah, now, so let's talk about a little bit about you. Let's talk about your history and what you're doing and how you got caught up in this.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
So, I grew up in Kaukauna. So for those who are from Wisconsin, most people know that it's somewhere between Appleton and Green Bay.
It's not so far up north.
It's not so far up north.
Right.
But, so it's a different world in many ways than Milwaukee County.
Right.
If we're going to be fair.
No question.
So my dad worked at a paper mill. He was a maintenance mechanic, industrial apprentice there. So he was an hourly guy, and he was involved in his union. My mom worked at another paper company. She did some customer service work or sometimes was working in the mill as well. So, of course, I had college summer jobs in the mill.
Right.
But I grew up in this environment where it was a pretty close-knit or nosy community.
Yeah, and middle class.
And middle class. Very middle class and blue collar. We got by relatively comfortable, but, we weren't it's a different world than a lot of the folks I know right now.
Yeah, you're right.
My dad was active in his union. So I grew up in union halls. I like to sometimes joke around that I acquired a fondness for four-letter words in some of those union halls. Probably shouldn't admit that. But anyone who knows me, it's going to be hard to hide.
Right.
So in those halls, I saw a lot of people joining together. They were working together to make a difference, to try to offset the imbalance of power. And it struck me kind of at a young age that this is democracy. I suppose it didn't strike me that as democracy until a later age, but that this was a way to make a difference. This was a way to have a voice. And it struck me as I got older that this was really just a different kind of democracy. And democracy is something that I've come to champion, a system that works for everybody, a system that has checks and balances so that no one party gets too powerful and controls everybody. And it was just, so that is my background. And it led me to my job as a union side labor lawyer. So I work with unions. I represent unions and their members. Try to make sure everybody gets paid and everyone comes home safely at the end of every day. I also do some work representing individuals in wage and hour cases where they haven't been paid properly or where they've been discriminated at work. And then having done that, I'm talking a lot.
But no, listen.
Having done that in Wisconsin for the last 16 years, we've seen a whole lot of legislative changes kind of directed by not necessarily the legislature and not the people, but that keep creeping into our laws and affecting people's ability to have a voice, to have a say, and to affect the system as it was intended, if that makes sense. And that kind of led me to here now, running to become a Court of Appeals judge.
You know, I want to go back, if you don't mind, to Kakana, when your mom and dad, and you were a child, a kid, in the town, and probably vibrant as any place was when there were paper mills, mm-hmm. and people had middle class jobs, and back then, and where it is now, and what happened to the communities, and it's the same thing. What happened in the rural communities with the paper mills, as it was with the cities.
Yeah, like when, Smith.
Well, that's where I worked for 34 years.
Oh wow!
I retired from there, and so when you look at all of these things, and there's more in common with people in rural Wisconsin as there is in the city, and I always like to try to get people to understand we shouldn't be adversarial. The same thing that happened to the paper mills happened to the cities, and we've got more in common in unions, the loss of unions that was orchestrated and organized to take away the middle class in this country is a battle that I, you know, have always championed and will always champion now, because, you know, a kid like me could get out of high school and live a middle class lifestyle and make a lot of money and have a pension and be able to do the things that, you know, right now far too many people can't. And I said all that to say this. You are running for, you know, District 1, and so there is a correlation between what happens in the courts today and the fact that so many people have lost an opportunity in the society. And so you hear people crime, 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 and as if people are somehow born to, you know, to do the things that they do. We've got systems that have failed, and people wind up doing things that aren't things that we can forgive. But as a society, we've got to have judges and people who can feel that, you know, people who come before them aren't just, you know, pieces of crap, right?
Yeah.
I think
it's important that judges have a really broad understanding of the world around them and an understanding of where people come from. Now, the Court of Appeals is the court that corrects errors. It corrects,
right.
corrects, you know, problems in the lower court's decision or in a jury verdict. But it is important that they have that kind of perspective of that they understand, you know, the blue collar background, that they don't see things from simply one perspective. And right now, we've got a couple of great judges on the bench in District 1. There's four judges. I'll give you a little quick civics lesson on the Court of Appeals, too, if you don't mind. There's four districts. There's in Wisconsin.
No, we need to know that.
So there's four districts in Wisconsin. Milwaukee County is its own district, and that's District 1. The other three districts are the northern part of the state, the southwestern part of the state, and the southeastern. There's four judges on this bench. Two of them were appointed by Scott Walker. I'm running against one of those judges. We have two other judges who are great judges. But all of the judges on this bench kind of share a common perspective. They're all, three of the four are in their 70s. The other one's in his, you know, mid-60s. They all come from a prosecutor-type, government, organizational-type background, and they've all been judges for over 30 years or nearly. So it's they don't have a lot of diversity of perspective about the real world around them or real people. And I think it's important that we try to return that to the bench.
You know, I already voted, and yes, I voted for you.
Well, thank you.
But I couldn't help, as I was looking at the ballot, that once people become judges, there's not a lot of competition.
There isn't.
I mean, the judges are basically there. They run every, 4 years? Or
they run 6 years.
Every 6 years. But so it really is important. And I think while we're dealing with all the other people and all the other positions, we need to know more about the people we put in these branches.
In any bench, in any court, I think it's important that we hold our judges accountable. You know, judges are appointed sometimes, and they don't, but they rarely run for election, re-election with any opposition. And I think it's important that we do hold judges accountable.
Yeah, it's a part of, it's the judicial branch, and we always talk about government, but, you know, we forget about that portion of government. You ever notice that?
I do.
I mean, and it's almost as one of the most critical parts of the government is the judicial branch, right?
Right. We've got the three branches of government for a reason. They're supposed to check and balance each other. And if we have the executive appointing judges without any sort of other check on that power, you know, it can be a problem. At least, you know, that's how it was set up in Wisconsin. So.
Yeah. So we'll come to the phones after the break. So hang on. So I just think it's so critically important that we've got to do a better job, especially those of us who are in the airways, to make sure that we get the candidates in as much as we would, the mayoral or the gubernatorial or legislature, to bring those people in. We've got to do a better job of understanding what's at stake when people are put on these benches, because they really control.
Yeah, I think it's particularly important where it's really particularly important in Milwaukee County, where we've kind of been, mapped out of relevance or mapped out of equal importance when it comes to our legislative districts.
Right. So listen, we've got to go to a break. I'm almost regretting having to say this. I've got Miss Sarah Deenan.
There you go.
I got it?
You got it right.
All right. Man, where's the applause, man? Okay. She's a candidate for District 1 bench, and phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. I'm happy to have her back in the studio. We'll be right back. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by my guest, Sarah Ganin.
Geenan.
I knew it was going to
happen. But we're two for three. Still winning percentage.
It was going to happen. Anyway, she's a candidate for District 1 bench. So let's talk about, let's go to the phone lines with Robert from West Dallas. Hey, Robert, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning. I also voted for you early, Sarah. My question is this. I was struck, just as Earl was, on the ballot. There's not a lot of these races where there's challengers. I saw there were two Walker appointees on there. One voted to get rid of the residency requirement, which had a big impact.
Devastating effect. Devastating effect.
Right. Yeah. And then the other one clerked for David Prosser. So I guess my question is, how do we get more people to run in these races and run against these folks? How do we attract more people to run in these races?
That's a great question, Robert. Hang on.
Yeah, I think and I'll be honest, and I don't know if my campaign team will be real excited about this, but one of the challenges of running as against incumbents is that, you know, the other judges who are there, who know you, who work with you on a day-to-day basis, you know, they're quick to throw their name behind yours without, you know, and all of these, despite the fact that they're all in the same position where none of them have been, you know, may have been challenged, or they may have been on the bench for dozens of years or many, many years. So I like to think that this is a way to shake up my race here, is a way to shake up the status quo, to show that, you know, incumbents who aren't doing their job should be held accountable, and they can be. And I want to be careful how I'm saying this, because I want to show that you can challenge from the outside. You can shake things up if you believe that it's necessary, or if you believe you're a better candidate. And that's what I believe here. I believe I'm the better candidate. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. And I want to show that I can gather the support I need to be successful and to make that fact that I'm a better candidate pay off. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer.
No, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. So Sarah, I'm confident in that one. Let's talk about the process of the courts, how all of this works, the different levels of it, because I think part of the frustrations that we have is we really feel ignorant how the system works.
Well, I think I think a lot of people aren't quite sure what the Court of Appeals is. My son had my oldest son turned 13 a couple weeks ago. So I went over this with a group of 13-year-old and 14-year-old boys. So I've got, I think, this speech down about how it works. Well, you know, when you file a lawsuit gets filed in, let's start with the fact that there's state and federal courts.
Right.
Now, what we're talking about here is state courts. Federal courts are all 100% appointed, but state courts are elected in Wisconsin. So if you're filing a lawsuit in state court, you file it in in a county court. So there's Milwaukee County has 50-ish judges. Every county has a judge in a county circuit court. Those counties are then divided into the courts of appeal, the appellate districts. So once the judge makes a decision, or if it's a jury case and the jury renders its verdict, if one of the parties to the lawsuit, or to, if it's a criminal defendant, if a party is unhappy with the decision, they can appeal. And it doesn't necessarily be that there's a lot of other appeals that can happen during the course of a case. So anytime a judge makes a decision on a significant matter, there can be an appeal throughout the process. And those cases go to the Court of Appeals. If you're unhappy, someone appeals it, they don't like the decision, it goes to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals has to take all of those appeals and has to consider all of those appeals. Once the appeal is filed in the district that the case started, with a few exceptions for state cases. So we go trial court, appeal to the Court of Appeals, and then the Court of Appeals makes a decision. If the people are unhappy, the people to a lawsuit or people to a case are unhappy with the Court of Appeals decision, they can appeal to the Supreme Court, which may or may not take the case. Most cases, I'd say probably 90-95%, end in the Court of Appeals. Now, that's the ordinary process. In the last few years, because of some of the big name cases, the gerrymandering, the other significant cases that we've had have gone straight to they've jumped Court. Around. They have not gone through the ordinary process.
So when you talk about the four courts of appeal,
mm-hmm.
Do they collectively look at the individual cases and then they vote on what cases are going to be heard?
Right. So if a case starts in Milwaukee County, a case is filed in Milwaukee County, it's going to go to the Court of Appeals in the District 1, so Milwaukee County Court of Appeals. If a case starts in any of the other districts, say if it starts in Outagamie County, for instance, up in Appleton, it's going to go into the appeal will be heard by the district that Outagamie County is in, the appellate district that Outagamie County resides in. And I think that's the northern one. If a case starts in Dane County, Madison, it will ordinarily be heard by that district court over there. That's District 4, where Chris Taylor is running for Court of Appeals unopposed right now. But there are some tricky things that they changed, that cases against the state that start in Dane County get kicked out to one of the other appellate districts.
So we've got to go to a break, and I'm not going to risk it. My guess, Ms. Sarah?
Geenan. It's easier with them. Right.
Right. She's a candidate for District 1, appellate seat. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So. Generation is still good for knowing good old music. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm really happy to have Sarah
Geenan,
who is a candidate for District 1 in Milwaukee County, right?
Yep, the District 1 Court of Appeals.
So what about big issues, you know, corporations and cases where people attempt to do what is almost impossible, and that's getting justice when you're going up against corporations? You know, it's almost like trying to take on the government.
It is. You know, I think that's something that I've got more recent experience with. And, you know, my background is particularly relevant because I don't have a lot of experience with lawyers or courts. You know, when I was 16 and I got a traffic ticket after getting in a minor car accident that was entirely my fault, I went to court and I was terrified. And this is a traffic ticket, but I didn't know what to expect. I don't know that I'd met a lawyer, you know. I might have heard of lawyers or something, but I don't know that I met a lawyer or a judge or knew what they really were until I got this traffic ticket.
What did you think you were going to see Judge Judy?
I had no idea, you know. I just don't think a lot of people know. It's this big, solemn, monolith. These courts are something that they exist, and they're a little terrifying to people who are from outside the system. And unless you know, or unless you have the money to know that everything's going to be all right— it's a scary experience, and it's a system that's meant, it is not particularly transparent. And I think that when we're talking about situations where we've got advantages, where we've got maybe a corporation with unlimited resources and individuals, I think it is incredibly important that the court be as transparent as possible, so people have faith in the system. They have faith that the courts are working the way they are supposed to. Now, whether or not the laws or whatever are the way that people want them is a different story, but we need to make sure that the courts are doing everything they can to respect people's rights and to make sure that what the court is doing is very clear.
So I have to tell you, I get frustrated a lot as I get older when I see things that occur and things that happen. And you know, even though the scale, this proverbial scale is blind and it's supposedly balanced. And then you realize that money, you know, justice is for those who can afford it.
There is a lot of truth to that. There is a lot of truth to that. So lawyers are expensive.
I know. So when you see that and you're an American citizen and you've believed in all of those things that we've been taught, and then you get there and you say, well, it's two separate, you know, systems.
Yeah.
How do you, and it's not, I'm not blaming you or anybody else. It's just the reality. How does the average citizen then reconcile this when we talk about the greatness of our democracy? And we see that mixed in it. And I'm not, you know.
That's a big question, Earl.
I know. I mean, no, I don't expect you to answer.
But it is fundamentally important. Yeah. I agree with you that it's fundamentally important that, you know, the system works for everybody, you know, for individuals. And I think, you know, some of this goes back to where we've got, you know, unlimited money poured into all these political races now, starting in the mid-2000s with, I think, that Citizens United case. Yeah. But, you know, in Wisconsin, it was worsened by the maps in 2011 that have made our votes in Milwaukee County count, you know, valued less than votes outside the place, where we've got this disjointed legislature, where we've got lack of representation, because one vote, one person and one vote doesn't necessarily equal the same weight in the greater scheme of things. So we've got these bad maps. And then we've got the legislature, based on these bad maps, making bad laws that affect the entire system. And, you know, the laws are the laws. But we've got to, it comes down to recognizing that people have got to vote for everything. We've got to hold everybody accountable. And that's how we start challenging the system. And then the people within the system need to make sure that everybody understands how the system is working.
You know, when, by having you on and explaining just how that entire judicial system works, you know, you just say, well, maybe we need to, that this kind of education needs to happen more, even when it's not time for people, candidates and
after
people are running.
Grade. Right. After fourth grade, when you've got your mandatory civics lessons.
Yeah. I mean, really, but you know, I had it in fourth grade, but that was 100 years ago.
No, it's absolutely important. Right.
But it's more important now for me to know that than it was when I was in fourth grade, because when you look at things that are happening in the society, and you want to see change, and if we really realize, the person who can make the corrections is the person that we should be voting for, who we don't even know anything about. Right. And what they are doing, right?
Right.
I mean, it's, to me, it just, you know, we've got to figure out a better way. We've got to figure out a better way to get people to understand this. And I think part of that is the role that somebody like myself must play in having people like you on to, you know, to explain these things. I remember one time I was in a small claims court. And I, you know, again, I'm a big Judge Judy fan, even to this day, right?
Right.
And even though that's entertainment, I said, well, small claims, I can go in. And I remember I was renting somebody's property, and it was time for me to move, and they were trying to charge rates, you know, keep my, what is it?
Security deposit.
For little scratches. I'd been in the place for about 5 years. And somebody said, well, you don't need an attorney for that. It's small claims, you go in. Well, the person had an attorney.
The management company's going to have an attorney, right?
and I'm saying, okay, well, I got common sense on my side. I got truth on my side. And so I'm fine. I'm going to go in and I'm going to tell, and I'm feeling really good. But when I got in, and what we may think is common sense in law, right?
No, there's loopholes. There's secret rules. I don't mean secret in the sense that there's secret, but there's things that lawyers understand that regular people,
the way the laws
don't.
Are written.
Right. And anyone who is experiencing a situation like that, I think there is a tenant resource center that they should give a call first if they're going to try to do it themselves. But you know, it's so getting back to your other question, part of it is making sure that people do know that what resources are available for someone who is suing. You know, there's legal action and there's some other programs in the state. But you're exactly
right.
Well,
I just picked that out, but all the other issues and not just something from that perspective, but realizing the way law is written is not sensical to the average person. And you can't think that, and this is why it's so important that we have people who are in those positions and places who we can feel comfortable.
And while you're talking about nonsensical, if anyone who still has their ballot or is still going to vote before, or you're going to vote on Tuesday, you should take a look at the referendum questions in advance. Because the referendum questions are
nonsense.
You're going to need to do some research on it. I think the League of Women Voters has some website information on what the referendums mean, so that people can at least be informed and understand what they're voting yes or no to, because those questions are they are loopy.
I have never, in all of them, I've been voting since I was 18 years old, never not voted. And I don't care if it's for a school board, I'm voting. But when I got to that part of the ballot, there's about five of them. And I couldn't, and I'm like, I don't even know what this is. What is the purpose of that even? But that's a part of the things we're talking about. That should have never even been on the ballot.
Well, and some of them don't have any context either.
Right.
So someone sent me the questions, and I was reading it, and I think someone texted the question to me, and I read it, and I, you know, my lawyer brain was still a little confused.
Right.
So I contacted people. You know, I think there were a couple of bail questions. So I contacted people who work in criminal law and I asked for an explanation. And then I went to the League of Women Voters website. There was a couple other, there was another website, and I wish I could remember it, that had another great explanation about what they actually mean and why they're there. So there's to be informed for those nonsensical questions or nonsensically worded questions.
Right.
Is something I also wanted to make sure people are aware of.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Tom from L.A.
Hey, Earl.
Good morning.
First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. You're absolutely correct about ballot measures, because that's where the commercials actually went in, and the money in politics wins in, because of the fact that people, you know, they look at these questions. I'll just give you an example. Here in California, we had a marriage proposal for the LGBTQ community, and you know, you thought no meant yes and yes meant no, and people were confused. And they, you know, they voted certain ways that made it so, you know, gay marriage wasn't legal back then, before the courts took over. But, yeah, it's really, really important. I know my dad taught history for about 35, 40 years in high school. And it wasn't until his last few years actually in teaching that he decided to go and teach from the present back to the past. He taught world history. And it was probably the best thing. He had the most fun with it and everything like that, because you know how it is. When we're all younger, we're all saying, why do I need to learn this, right? That's always, why do I have to learn all this stuff from the past? Well, now we know why, because this is what happens when we are not an engaged citizenry, and that we end up losing all of our rights. We end up where the multi-billionaires and the billionaire class actually take everything over, and then they just pit us against each other on the middle and the lower class to fight it out with each other. So therefore, we never do what's good for you know, the people. So I guess really and truly, it does come down to education, and it comes down to figuring out a way to actually engage people in education. And I hate to say that it might have to be done through entertainment, but Earl, we were talking the other day, and I'm kind of all over the place, but we're talking the other day about the churches, and what popped into my head was Sister Act, how they had no one going into the pews, and then all of a sudden they had all this singing with Whoopi Goldberg and everyone was showing up. I mean, there's something about entertainment if it's done in the right way. And I think that we have to figure out what that way is, so people are learning and it's fun and, you know, understanding that they're, you know, most people don't understand that there's three branches of government and what they mean. And they don't understand balance of power. They don't understand money in politics. They don't understand the difference between private and public. I mean, these are just things that are on the surface.
So Tom, do you have a question for,
I think my question basically is, well, I think what should happen, honestly, because of the fact of what we have in our society, is I think what we should have, and I want to know if you agree with me on this, but when a person runs for office or a person that's in office already, I think they should have a platform, and they should have signed something that said this is what they're going to do when they get into office. So they have a scorecard. So then when it comes to actually either, you know, running again or whatever, you can look at that scorecard and see if they've actually followed up with that. What do you think of that?
Hey, Tom, we got to go to break, man. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Sarah Geenan, and she is a candidate for District 1.
The Court of Appeals.
Court of Appeals. Yeah. As we start wrapping this up, you should have a conversation with the listening audience. I'll step back and let them know why you think it's important that, number one, that you should be appointed or you should be elected to the seat.
Right. Well, I think I've said a couple times that I think it's really important that we vote for change and accountability and transparency in our courts, and that we hold all of our judicial candidates accountable, that we want to know how they're going to look at the things, you know, and it's not, I'm not talking about how they're going to decide anything. I'm talking about where they come from, because it certainly affects how you understand the law. Otherwise we wouldn't have, you know, a Supreme Court of 7 or 9 people making decisions. We do that because people view the law differently. And I think a lot of times it comes down to where we're from and how we grew up and who we grew up with. And kind of the fundamental things that have happened in our lives that change how we see the world or that affect how we see the world. And I think I've done a pretty good job getting out of my bubble and staying out of my bubble and challenging my own comfort zone to understand the world around me. I think I told you that when I first moved to Milwaukee after law school, I coached basketball. I love coaching basketball. I like to coach middle schoolers, and particularly because I can beat them still one on one. Although a couple of the kids, a couple of my 8th grade boys this year were a little challenging, and they smoked me pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know, when I first came to Milwaukee, one of the things I did was I coached basketball through Milwaukee Rec, Milwaukee Public Schools, and you know, Sarah from Kaukauna comes and coaches basketball in the north side of Milwaukee, and I think that was really a fundamental and transformational experience in understanding how much I don't understand about the world. And I think that was important, as well as the blue collar background, understanding just the kind of variations and differences and where I came from and where I am now. But more than that, I think it's really important for people to learn about me. I want people to learn about me. So I'm telling you some of these things because I'm trying to give voters an understanding of my background.
Married with 3 sons.
Married with 3 sons. I've got 3 boys, 2 chubby dogs that could use a few more walks, but you know.
I thought you were going to say a chubby husband.
Boy, no, that doesn't sound like it's going to get anybody anywhere good. My husband is wonderful.
Yeah.
He's also a lawyer. But we live, our kids go to MPS. We are really active and involved in our community. And, you know, I've earned some really tremendous support throughout this campaign. And I am, you know, I'm actually humbled. I'm truly, truly humbled and astounded by the number of organizations that have my back. And not just because the organizations, because these are organizations that represent people, that work to organize people and work to organize and make people's lives better. So we've got Voces de la Frontera, Fair Wisconsin, Block. We've got just tons of really great support grassroots organizations. We've got Wisconsin AFL-CIO. I think I just went online to check before we started because I knew I wasn't going to remember everybody. And I think now there's like over 36 organizations, including Planned Parenthood and some of these other great groups that work to try to protect people's rights and to make sure that they do have a voice, like we were talking about, to try to address these imbalances that we see in our system.
You know, when you get into the campaigning and all of those things, somehow there are sides to these things. Conservative, liberal, which there's not supposed to be in any of these instances, right? When we're talking about Lady Justice, there's never an L or a C for, you know, liberal or conservative.
Right.
But we've gotten there.
We have. And I think a lot of it does come down to how people's views and how people's lives have shaped how they interpret the law and how they understand the law. And possibly who supports them when they're running for re-election, if it's going to come down to that. But, we've done a great job.
Can we get beyond that ever? I don't know if there's ever any turning back.
Well, I think our system was set up to be fair and democratic, and that's always the goal. That goal should always be to ensure a more fair and a more democratic process.
But it doesn't mean that it is that.
It is not perfect. Right. It is not perfect. It is an attempt, but that should always be the end goal. It shouldn't be about conservative or progressive or liberal. It should be about making sure that we've got a democratic process and we've got that so that each branch of government serves what they're supposed to.
You know, that and maybe there always was, you know, Democrat and Republican in it, but I clearly don't remember in the younger years of my life that was so prominent and out in the open much as it is now.
I don't think it was. I think it changed in the 2000s, Citizens United, where money starts pouring in and money starts having influence on what democracy means and what justice means, and when that was never the intent.
Yeah. Well, so I want to say good luck.
Thank you.
You know, I'm happy to have had an opportunity to meet you, and hopefully we can do this again, even whether or not you are victorious or not. I think you're a great person. You've got great appeal about you, and so I'd love to have you back on from time to time.
I'd love to be back to talk about anything and everything.
All right, so again, that's Sarah Geenan.
Geenan, yep.
Who is a candidate for District 1 of the Court of Appeals in Milwaukee County.
Yep, if you live in Milwaukee County, I'll be on your ballot on Tuesday.
Yeah, so good luck, and, you know, hopefully when you win, you can come back and say thank you.
I'd love that.
All right, got to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Mr. Clarence Mason Weaver, and boy, you don't want to miss this. We'll be right back.